today with one of my favorite returning guests and a dear friend, the internationally best-selling author Karma Brown. Karma is the author of 5 novels, including the number 1 international bestseller, Recipe for a Perfect Wife, Come Away With Me, The Choices We Make, In This Moment, and The Life Lucy Knew. She is also the author of The 4% Fix, How 1 Hour Can Change Your Life. We talked about her latest novel, What Wild Women Do, the story of an inspiring contemporary screenwriter, a 1970s socialite turned feminist, and the camp in the woods that ties their stories together forever. But not just that. We got into some pretty deep talks about why committing to one path may not actually get us to where we want to go. About how we have to let ourselves be surprised by what life puts in front of us. We also got into some pretty serious talks about feminism and what it means to force ourselves out of a comfort zone that may be padded by the patriarchy that actually doesn't want us to succeed, and how Karma really weaves that into the story of her characters and their journey. I know I say this every week, but this is a good one. And I think we are all going to walk away from this conversation with more than just writing advice, self-care tips, but a real shift in our worldview and how our art can make such a difference, not just for ourselves, but for everyone. Enjoy the show.
Thank you so much for joining me again, Karma.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me again. It's great to chat with you.
It's so exciting to be like, it still feels like I started the show like not that long ago, but to have like return guests is so exciting to me. I'm so stoked. So lots of people caught your episode. It was definitely one of our most listened to episodes. But for anyone who is new to yourself and your writing, can you just give us a little author origin story, a little backstory of how you came to be such a fantastic international best-selling author?
It was all, you know, a mistake, and I don't know how it happened. No, I never wanted to be a writer, so I'm one of those authors who legitimately did not consider being an author as a career path, despite being a voracious reader all through my life and loving books and loving storytelling. I wanted to be a journalist, and I wanted to be a broadcast journalist. And I went to school to do that. And, you know, that's what I thought would happen. A variety of life experiences happened, which we may or may not talk about as we go through, you know, the rest of this podcast. But what it did is then force me sort of out of that path of like what would have been a very lonely journey to broadcast journalism, because you tend to have to go far, far away from people you love, find those little communities where you can find a space and a platform to do that. And I started writing for magazines and loved that. And then just thought, well, why don't I try? Because I am very much I like accumulating experiences. I'm curious, growth mindset. Why don't I try writing a novel? You know, how different can that be? And I say that every time I talk about this story, but it's so true. I legitimately thought it can't be that much different. You're still telling the story. It's just a much longer format. It is very different, but I also loved it so much more than I thought. And
the challenge probably.
Yeah. And just the building out a fictional world. It is so fun to live in a world that you have created out of your own mind, and you are the puppet master of that world. But then weird things happen in a book that you don't plan for, and the magic, the alchemy of that is intoxicating. So I loved it. And one book turned into, you know, 9, like Wild Women, it will be my 9th published book.
Wow.
So 2 of them are rom-coms, which were co-written. One is a nonfiction. But, you know, that is in 10 years that I've written 9 books. So it's suddenly a career that I never expected. And I'm almost 51. So it's sort of like my second half life career. But it's mostly been like fun. Mostly been a blast. So
I love
that's
that.
what happened.
I love that because I think so often we hear that authors are really chasing the dream and chasing the past passion, and it's so funny because we're the ones who are feel the least like we are allowed to have it. And so I love that it kind of chose you. I love that life was like, you're on the wrong path, girl.
Yeah, let me
But
just show you an
let me just
alternative.
give you a
But
nudge.
you know, I have to say, like, having said all of that, because I know it does sound a little like, oh, I just one day decided I'd write a book, and then I wrote nine, and then I was a bestseller, and that's not exactly how it went, of
Right.
course. Like, this is not a linear career. I say that all the time, that the ups and downs continue no matter how many books you've written and how successful you've been writing them. It's never easy. Every time it is hard and it is
Yeah.
different. And I am a very, very motivated, ambitious person. Like, I need to goof off a little more. This is like my age 51, what I'm planning to try to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a bit of a dark side when you're, you know, I think I have been chasing things for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It wasn't that lifelong dream. I wanted to
Right.
be Katie Couric and, you know, deliver the news. That was my dream. And so this was just the, let's try this. And I ended up loving it. And that's why I
Right.
always say, including to my 15-year-old daughter, like, you don't have to commit to one thing right now because you
Yeah.
actually don't know what you're going to love to do. And something might surprise you if you're
Yeah.
open to trying something different. So,
Exactly. Well, and I think your career though shows that it's as much as you may love it and it's what you came to, there's still a lot of pivoting that has to be done.
oh,
I
so
mean,
much.
so many authors we see on the bestsellers list, it's like they started in fantasy and that's their whole career. And that's great. And that's, but it's a shooting star. I mean, you wrote fiction, then you wrote nonfiction, then you co-authored rom-coms. And it's like sometimes you have to pivot to achieve a career in this business. So that's, I think, a great lesson for people to see that, you know, it's still a lot of hard work. You still have to have that foresight of the business aspect of it. So, you know, but you're back to fiction, and I am so
Yeah.
excited. I'm so excited for this book. So your latest novel is called What Wild Women Do. And there's so much I can say about this book, but we've had discussions about farm animals before, but when I opened this book to your to the acknowledgement pages, Karma, and when I saw a t I know this is not a visual platform, but when I saw a tiny little Karma holding chickens and I'm looking at my backyard filled with chickens and ducks and geese, I was even more excited to read this story. I love how even when you're writing fiction, you are just always so authentically you. And so I'm gonna grab my copy and I'm gonna read for the listener the jacket description of this book, but it is honestly, it's probably going to be one of my favorites for the fall, to be very
Oh,
honest.
thank you so much, Eden.
Of course. So What Wild Women Do is it's a really beautiful kind of feminist story about like finding our wildness again. So our jacket copy here says, Rowan is stuck. Her dreams of becoming a screenwriter are stalled, along with her bank account, as she and her fiance Seth try to make sense of what's next for them after leaving LA. But when the couple takes a trip to a cabin in the Adirondacks, hoping the change will provide inspiration for Seth's novel and progress, Rowan finds herself drawn into a story greater than her own, that of socialite turned feminist crusader Eddie Calloway, who vanished one day in 1975 and was never found or heard from again. In a handbook left behind in the abandoned ruins of a once great camp, Rowan learns more about the enigmatic Eddie and discovers clues to what happened to her. As Rowan delves deeper into the mystery, we meet Eddie herself, a fierce and loving woman whose greatest wish was to host women at her camp and unlock their wildness. However, Eddie's wild ways aren't welcomed by everyone, and rifts between camp owners threaten her mission. When Rowan gets closer to the truth of Eddie's disappearance, she realizes that it may hold the key to unlocking her own ambition and future. That's also like the best jacket copy I've read in a really long time.
Oh, I'll be sure, you know, that was a co-effort between me and my editors, and you know,
people don't get that is harder to write than the book.
So hard. And I'm so grateful because I know there are some authors who are tasked with creating that themselves, and whereas I've had the, you know, benefit of my editors taking their first crack at it and then sending it to me so I can massage, yeah, and you know, do the editing that is always so much easier than the generating of the thing in the first place.
Of course.
So it's a group effort for sure to get to
it's
that
a beautiful
spot.
It's a beautiful description of a beautiful book. This, oh, for me, you, this story is so much more than the story of like an artist who is sort of stuck in this creative roadblock and needs to find her muse again. This book really, at least for me, the way I interpreted it, is about her, as it says in the copy, finding her wildness again. And like, you know, as someone who's embraced the chicken and duck life, you know, just, but even these, this kind of, you know, it's a symbol for me. It was really a symbol for me of doing something that wasn't monetized, that wasn't societally, like, you know, acceptable for a lady, or like it didn't have any benefit to the world outside of what I was doing. It was something, yeah, that I got dirty and I get to play in the mud and I get to, you know, be sweaty and covered in bird feathers. And it's like, it's the same kind of thing with Rowan, where she's really exploring, to me, all these things that like society suppresses women to have, and it's unladylike, or it's not mature, it's not grown up, it's not play. And she's really discovering how to like break free of that. And
yeah,
it just, for me, like, I know the reasons why I did that, and so I connected really, really deeply with this story. What inspired you to tell this kind of like theme through Rowan?
I think that, I mean, I knew that I wanted it to have these feminist themes. I knew that my two characters were going to be trying to do something in a patriarchal society that went against what they were supposed to be doing, much more blatantly for Eddie in the 1970s, a little more subtly for Rowan in the modern day. But I wanted to play with this idea of ambition and wildness in women. And, you know, we had a lot of back and forth about wildness and what that means. And I was very clear, and I really stuck to this point, that the idea that people have about wild women, that they are loud and brash, and it's all about bravery, like big B bravery and big C courage. And that's not at all how I view wildness in this story. There are examples of that, but it's the quiet wildness, the quiet courage, you know, the thing like that you said about you've chosen a certain lifestyle that doesn't quite fit, and you can explain it, but you don't have to, and it doesn't matter, right? Because yeah, it fits with something that fills you, that fulfills a need within you. And I grew up as a child of hippies on a farm. That picture that's at the front of the book is me. I'm probably about 4 years old. I have a chicken under each arm. I have a very determined look on my face as I'm, who knows where I'm carrying them? No one remembers. You know, I talked to my parents and I was like, what was I doing? But this was a very common, you know, thing for me. I loved the animals. I clearly needed to move those chickens somewhere, and, you know, off I go.
Very determined. Yes.
Very determined. And that picture represents exactly who I feel that I am, you know, like all the parts of us all live inside of us. And that little girl holding those chickens is still very much inside of me, despite the fact that I don't have chickens, but I long to have that in the future at some point again. So I wanted to do this sort of love letter to my childhood, to this completely free roaming experience I had, you know, where it was just me and my sister walking around the woods near our farm, playing with the chickens, just this like idyllic sort of childhood. Mm-hmm. But also how it's so hard to keep that sense of self, that sense of knowingness about who you are. It gets lost in all of us. And then I think our goal, not in all of us, but in many of us, the goal is then to find it again. And so Eddie much more easily finds it. By easy, I don't mean that her journey was easy, but she becomes very clear about the direct shift she has to make to find that part of herself and to let it run free. And Rowan, it takes a little longer. It's a little more complicated in some ways because she's not quite sure what she's looking for yet. But I just wanted to explore the differences. You know, the world is still patriarchal in the 1970s and today. Things look a little different in both of those eras. But I wanted to, again, like in Recipe for Perfect Wife, explore the differences of being a woman at these two very different times in history, but how there are as many similarities as there are differences in their environments, like, you know, context changes and setting changes, but that striving still lives in so many of us. So that's what I wanted to do.
I think it's a brilliant reminder of, how far we've come, but not necessarily in the way you think, because we're always toting how far we've come. We can vote, we can have a bank account. But in reality, I think Rowan, in my opinion, maybe struggled more because there isn't a clear and concise enemy at the forefront anymore, as with Eddie. And in the 1970s, there was a very clear, you know, enemy. There was the villain in the patriarchy that they were fighting, and very clear things that they were trying to regain control of. Where today, sometimes I feel as women, we're kind of like, you know, we're told like, well, you have so much and you were so far along. So like, why are you complaining about the fact that, you know, these things are not accessible to you? So sometimes it's hard to find the permission to allow yourself to want more. And one of the things, the real beautiful themes I found between Eddie and Rowan was like this, us not being allowed to just exist as who we are without having to ask permission or feel guilty, you know, to not conform to whatever box society has decided we have to be in, right? And it was really beautiful to watch her really kind of go back and forth with not only wanting to find what she really is or who she really is, but the fact that that's really uncomfortable. And that was, you know, was that something that was important for you to show with Rowan, that it wasn't just this like easy slip into the waters of like who her true self was, that it was uncomfortable because maybe she had to give up some of the like, you know, luxuries of leaning into the patriarchy a little bit. And I think that's something that a lot of us struggle with, you know, realizing that it's going to displace us a little bit and we're going to have to maybe be a little uncomfortable in that for a while.
Yeah, because I do. I mean, we benefit as white women from the patriarchy. It is, that's why we have continued to support it in many ways. And, you know, I still do that. I support it in ways that I'm not even aware of on a day-to-day basis, despite the fact that I work very hard to try to see that and to try to understand it. I know that what my biases are, and I understand the privilege and benefit that I get from being in the shadow of the patriarchy.
Right.
You know, I think that it is, I did, this book was just, it was all over the place at one point for me because I am the age that Eddie was. And I very specifically made her that age because there are all kinds of things that I was trying to figure out as I was turning 50. What, you know, does that mean anything different? Like, am I getting my witch pin now that I'm 50?
Yeah.
And like, you know, have I fully landed into this place where I can just be like, can I swear on this?
Yes, of
like
course.
My fuck bucket is 100% empty now. And
right.
So is that where I'm at? And no, that is not where I'm at because I can't quite play in that space yet. I have not figured out how to do that. I'm not sure I want to do that 100%. You know, there's so I was trying to, you know, I went back in time with Eddie and it was still very fraught. It was a very fraught time to be a woman. It was a very fraught time in terms of the racism that existed within the second wave feminism. There was a lot going on. But there was some clarity for Eddie around what she was trying to do. She had the simple goal, which was to bring women, to use her privilege, to bring women to this camp, to give them these moments of adventure so that they might discover a little more about who they were. And I loved the simplicity of Eddie's mission. That felt just like, I want to spend time there. Because, and it was fun to write about the 70s because I grew up in the 70s. And so there were all these little things I got to put in, which is the joy as a fiction writer to put the little quirks that you love into a story and find a place for them.
Of course.
But with Rowan, you know, Rowan lives inside me too. And, you know, I'm as much Eddie as I am Rowan. And so it was just such a, I don't know what I was trying to do really.
Which
I
is
don't
kind
know
of
if
the
I did
exciting
what I was
part of
trying to do.
fiction.
Yeah, you're making it up a little as you go, and you're honoring their stories, which are not at all my story, of course. But I do, I mean, I have said, like, Rowan and Eddie live inside me. In their entirety, they live inside me in different ways, and come out in different ways. And I'm still trying to figure all of that out. So I wanted to give Rowan, she has that more confusing, like you said. How do I say I want more when I already have all of this? And in Recipe for Perfect Wife, that was Alice. Alice was very much asking for more, despite the fact that on paper and in some people's opinions, including readers who have sent me many messages about this, Alice had enough. You know, she had lots. And so do you have a right to ask for more when you already have so much? And I think, you know, like you said, though, you don't get to move forward without having to let go of things. It just is how it works. You can't bring everything with you. So you do sometimes have to decide. And then I won't explain what happened, you know, what Rowan's decisions were, because people will have to read to find out what she decided to do. But she has to make some of those very hard decisions where she's choosing to show up differently in life. Than she did before.
Well, and I think one thing that I got from the story, again, we won't, no spoilers, promise, but I think that it flipped the conversation for me, and it was less about us asking for more instead of asking for different. Like, I feel like it's not a case of like, it really, it's not, we're not asking for more. We just want different, and that's okay. You're allowed to, and this even for male or female, like you're allowed to change the plan, like you did, you know, like you're allowed to go so far and then say, actually, this is not what I want. I want to live a different way, a way that feels more authentic and genuine to me. And I love that. And so, actually, it brings me to one of my last questions, not last questions, but towards the end here. Do you find, or like, one, does your daughter read your work? Does she read your books?
She has read parts of them, yes.
So my curiosity is, because our kids are around the same age, and I know that their generation is take no shit, give no fucks. Like, they are the generation I wish I lived in, and I have so much like faith for the world with their generation coming up. Was there a part of you while you were writing this story that was like kind of inspired by her and her generation to like, these two women, Rowan and Eddie, would just be so happy to see young girls and young female identifying persons living this way. Like, this is kind of like the goal of where we want to get to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think about that all the time. I think about her and her generation and what, you know, where their sore points are going to be. And as women, in particular because I have one kid and she's female, and so that is particularly important to me, but how she's going to get to move through the world going forward based on the things that are happening now and the decisions they're going to make. But the other piece that was that became a big part of this for me was the legacy of the women who have come before. And I had interesting conversations during editing around the second wave of feminism. And there were, you know, I received editing feedback that maybe we wanted to lean out of the second wave feminism because at this time, and this was a few years ago and before Roe v. Wade was overturned, there was this feeling of just like enough second wave feminists, like you're dinosaurs, right. You left a lot of women behind. We're not going to replicate the way that you did this, without really, in my view, a true understanding and appreciation of the steps that were taken. It was imperfectly done, but shit got done that right. moved the rights of women forward. And that was never more obvious than when Roe v. Wade got overturned. And all of a sudden, all these women who had, this had been a right for them since the day they were born, no longer had that, what was right. considered to be a basic right and should be a basic right. And so I also, I mean, I think that's why I wrote Eddie and didn't just write a story about Rowan finding something. And then in the backstories, you know, we can find Eddie yeah. through that. I wanted Eddie's voice to be in there because it was so important to me to be like, yeah, we, this generation is going to do things differently, just like every generation has done things differently.
Right.
And hopefully better, and working toward a goal so that all of us can have more freedoms and more rights and live our right. lives more easily. But we can't forget about the women, as imperfectly as they handled everything. We can't forget what they did to get us to a place where we have the right and the, and the, you know, the space
yeah.
to try.
Yeah. Well, it's, in my opinion, it's like all of history. We can't take, you know, it's very much like what's happening in Florida. We're not going to get too crazy political, but you know, what's happening in Florida where, you know, the critical theory and they don't want to, they yeah. don't want to teach these things. So they're cherry picking parts of history that look best or don't look best on, you know, whomever they can position it for what they, their agenda. And for me, that has always, the same thing has been kind of a little like thorn in my side about when we talk about feminism and the surrogates, suffragettes, sorry, and all that, because yeah, a lot of them were white women racists who very, very much did not include, who demonized Black women and Latino women and gay women, that kind of thing. But if we don't learn from our mistakes, we don't learn. We can't just either A, say all the positives that were done, or B, say all the negatives that were done, or just don't talk about it at all. That's not how, you know, that's not why history exists. History is there so that we learn everything. This is what we did right. This is what we did wrong. Here is how we move forward. So I think it's important to still, like you said, tell stories about that time. As long as you're being, and I thought you very, you know, you did it very well. You're still being conscious and you're still being respectful of the biases, of the privilege. And you really did that in a really beautiful way without, you know, either A, skirting over the topic and kind of just putting it into past, you know, snuff, or B, you know, the white savior thing of like, well, I'm going to put so much in there so that I, you know, I check every box and
that is something that is, I think we all have to think about that if we're writing, particularly from a historical place where all that has already happened and all that is true. But I was very clear that as much as that existed and the racism of that time within the feminist movement is critically important, there are also so many people who tell those stories much better than I do. It is not my place to write someone else's trauma
exactly.
into my story. And so I did not include that piece. I wanted to create a reflective community of the time. It doesn't mean that it didn't exist. And this is one of the things that I have so learned, particularly in this last year, because I'm in this space where I'm just trying to figure all kinds of things out for myself and about what is important to me. And I think it's like a milestone birthday always does that to you. But what I've really like settled into is this idea that two things can be true at the same time. And I don't know why this feels earth shattering to me, that two things can be true at once. But, you know, it's true that there was a lot of racism in that time. And you know, the leaving out of important groups who should have been part of that fight. It's also true that a lot of progress was made at that time, and that today's women are enjoying or have been enjoying the progress that was made at that time.
Right.
And so those things exist simultaneously, and one does not cancel out the other. They can be true all at once. And as soon as you're like, oh, we don't have to pit one thing against the other. We don't have to pit people against one another. These things can be true together. And how you deal with that going forward, you know, is where you're putting your energy and your thought and what's important to you and your priorities. It just doesn't, like eliminate one or the other. And so every time I'm faced with anything, even in my books, I'm always like, okay, what are the things that are true at the same time here?
Yeah.
So that I don't end up in a place where I'm just, you know, focusing on one aspect. But again, I won't write someone else's trauma into my story.
No, and I think just that's not
my thing.
I think that's a beautiful note though, because I'm constantly seeing this conversation online of authors, you know, who have, you know, white authors who have written stories of Black people or Indigenous people, and then saying, well, they're always saying, they are always saying that their stories need to be told. So why can't I tell it? Because it's not our story to tell. And I think that, you know, anybody who follows you on social media or knows you as a person knows that you're doing the kind of, you're doing the work that needs to be done, in that you're telling the story that you have the context and the experience to tell. And then, like you said, it shouldn't be a shocking concept. We amplify and promote, and we give space to the, you know, BIPOC and Indigenous and queer authors telling their story. Because like you said, two truths can be, you know, two things can be true at the same time, and two books and two authors can exist at the same time. It's really like, write your story, write what you know, but then leave space to amplify those other voices.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, like Eddie loves men and women in this story. And again, I am heterosexual. And so I'm not bisexual, not a lesbian. I do not, that is not an own story situation for me. But there's also the piece around, in a historical setting, this was something that was happening in the 1970s, where women suddenly freed to make some different decisions, as you said, like choose something different, were experimenting and exploring. And in the end, love is, you know, like you, the love of a man, the love of a woman, I understand that people have absolute preferences. But I very carefully made that just reflective of who she is as a character versus trying to put out a message about gay women in the second wave of feminism.
Exactly.
Because again, you know, that is a whole other part of the story that is not my story to tell.
Exactly.
So, but you know, it is a hard thing. It is a, like, you're trying to honor your character and tell the story that you envision. And you always sort of have to check yourself and be like, okay, can I tell this story this way? Is this fair? Is this right? Is it my place? And that's fine. That's how it should be. That's how it, no one does it right all the time.
No, of course not. But I think really it comes down to the intention. I think, like you said, if you're checking yourself, if you're taking a step back from your work and saying, what is my work doing? What is the intention of putting a bisexual character in here? What is the intention of telling, you know, even if one of your side characters is a Black or Indigenous or queer character, what's the intention of it? Is it to prop up my story, or is it to tell an experience, which is what you did? And that is okay. That is just, you just have to check with yourself. So my final question, and I know most authors hate this one,
Oh no.
but I want to know. I'm sure everybody else listening wants to know, but what are you working on next? And I'm giving this precursor now. If it's nothing and you're taking a break, that is also valid. But if you have something that you can tell us a little snippet of, a little secret of, we'd love to know what you're working on next.
I did take a long break. I mean, long for me, like
Good.
5 months, where I wrote nothing like through the winter and spring once I finished edits on this because I was pretty burned out after
Yeah.
many books and COVID and, you know, perimenopause, like a million things just all hit at once.
Yeah.
But now I'm going to hold this idea very close to my chest because I am
Good.
hopping genres again.
Ooh.
I can say that it will still very much have the feminist themes that are my North Star, it seems. That is what I always put in my books now. I cannot, I tried, I desperately tried to eliminate. I was like, just write a story. Don't worry about that part. You know, you can
Yeah.
come back to it. Let's just see if we can just, and I just couldn't. It just didn't,
No, you
I
have
just
to
was
be
like,
true to who you
something's
are.
missing. I have a
Yeah.
lot of things I'm thinking about here, and so I'm just going to keep, you know, doing that. But anyway, it is a different genre. It is something that I have always wanted to write. It is my favorite genre to read. These are all like little hints, but I won't actually give it away. And it, I mean, I can't say anything. I'm
That's
like
okay. I like
a
the
quarter of the
anticipation.
way in. You know, this book has not yet been sold. So this is the first time in a long time that I have been working on a story that is not under contract.
Yeah.
That an editor isn't waiting for, and I'm just taking my time and I am writing like the book that I want to write.
Well, and it's going to evolve too. So you can't tell us now because it's going to be a totally different book when
No,
you're done.
but there will be
Awesome.
hints. I have been leaving hints about what I'm doing on
Ooh,
Instagram, and
love
so
it.
there's ways to figure out what genre it is, I think,
Well,
but
that's a perfect lead-in for me to ask where all of our listeners can find you online, and then they can keep track of all the like hints and clues.
I am on Twitter or X, but I hate calling it that. And I'm on there sporadically because it's a weird place to be now.
Yeah,
And
it
Instagram, those are the two places where I spend time. And my handle is at Karma K Brown on both.
Perfect.
So that's where you can find me.
Perfect. If you have not gone out, because this will be releasing just a few short days after What Wild Women Do hits shelves. So if you have not gotten your copy yet, I want you, listener, to run down to your local indie bookstore, wherever they are, and pick up a copy. If they do not have a copy, DM them, email them, give them a call, because I guarantee that they want to put that book in your hands. And we want to support them. So thank you so much for chatting with me again today, Karma.
Thank you so much, Ian. This was a great chat. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite show. Thank you again, and until next time, Lonely Writers, be well.